Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. It's always a pleasure. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. Nicole Galinas is here, too. She's a good friend of ours, a longtime member of our Brain Trust. She is a contributing editor at City Journal. She's the Searle Freedom Trust Fellow at Manhattan Institute, and as I said earlier, a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Nicole, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jim. Always good to come on.
It's good to have you back, as always. Nicole, one of the things I know you've written about recently, actually within the last week or so, is just sort of a review of what got us into this housing challenge that we have right now. And this housing debacle, actually it's not so much a housing problem as it is a mortgage securitization problem. Is that correct?
Right. At this point, it's really a global credit crisis, but originally it started out as a mortgage problem, and one of the reasons for that is that we never recognized housing as just another risky, speculative investment, even for people who live in their house, and if we had done so, we could have regulated it like we do any investment, whether it's stocks or bonds or options, and if we had just done some very simple things, it never could have gotten out of control to the extent that it did.
Now, the regulations that you propose that we should have done for housing to prevent this, give us an example of what that would look like.
Sure. With the stock market, for example, an average person can't buy 100 or can't borrow 100% of the value of stock. You've got to put down a certain
right.
percentage in cash. So if you had a rule like that for housing, if you had to put down even 10%, you never could have had the speculative bubble get out of control the way it did because a lot of people
bought houses with no skin in the game.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, if you're buying, a $300,000 house and you've got to put 30% down, that's a big hurdle for a lot
of people. Or even 20%.
Sure.
Which is the classic.
Right. Anywhere, say 10%, 20%, 30%, any number would have kept this bubble from expanding the way it did. And also things like protections against people investing in exotic securities. There's
mm-hmm.
a rule that a regular person without a few million dollars in the bank can't invest in hedge funds, and that's because regulators have figured out that people can't really understand the
right.
the risks of hedge funds. And you could say the same thing about interest-only mortgages.
There are in the investment world, there are accredited investors and sophisticated investors, and then everybody else. And
sure.
and so depending on the investments that you're looking at, you get categorized as a regular investor, a sophisticated investor, or an accredited investor. And there's certain things. If you're a regular investor, there are certain things that you can't do.
Sure, absolutely. And these adjustable rate mortgages were a sophisticated investment that very few people obviously understood the risk here. I mean, this is basically an unhedged bet on the direction of interest rates,
mm-hmm.
and we would not let average investors take these kind of bets in any other part of the market. So just, I'm not saying that we should become a heavily regulated communist nation or anything like that, but just some very simple investment protections that we have on almost any other type of investments would have done the job here.
Well, see, what happened was mortgage companies were allowed to create products that back-end loaded the interest and didn't load it up front, and that lowered the payment, which allowed people to comply with generally accepted practices for putting someone in a mortgage, with, you know, never mind that in 3 to 5 years the chickens were going to come home to roost when the back end loading, the adjustment of the mortgage interest rate was going to come home to roost. And when that happened, that's when things got upside down.
Sure, and that's, you know, clearly these mortgages were not suitable for people or their lenders over the long term, and that should be another thing. You know, just considering the basic suitability of an investment, you know, you can't, unfortunately, I didn't put this in the article, but I would have if I had thought of it, but, you know, you can't put an elderly widow in, you know, 100% some kind of tech stock, and it's the same thing here. You can't or you shouldn't be able to put
right.
somebody in a mortgage they won't be able to afford in a couple of years.
The securities laws of 1933, 1934, and a handful of subsequent ones prevented people from being able to prey on the uninformed and the widows, as you said a minute ago, just metaphorically speaking there, folks. The thing is that, you know, there probably should be something like that for real estate. However, Nicole, the regulation that you propose is at loggerheads with the Community Reinvestment Act.
Sure, and it's not just the
community. Explain to the audience what that is.
Sure. Well, I'm going to, you know, clearly starting 30 years ago, politicians of both parties decided, you know, we want to get as many poor people who haven't saved any money into home ownership as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly not just poor people here. I think that's important to understand. You had people making reasonable five-figure salaries who were buying houses that cost mid-six figures. You had wealthy people buying.
You're talking about recently. Recently that was happening.
Absolutely. I mean, this became a bubble across all income levels.
The Community Reinvestment Act, folks, was an imposition on, it was imposed upon banks to loan money to people who typically are, you know, might not quite qualify for standard loan application requirements. And it's a real sticking point. It's a thorn in the side of a lot of banks. And Nicole, correct me if I'm wrong, but the CRA got really liberalized over the last 10 or so years, didn't it?
Well, the CRA was just a part of this. In general, I would say it was more the psychology of the bubble, just like any bubble. You know,
back to my point about the regulation. What you're proposing to regulate would have been prohibited, I think, because of the CRA.
It would be prohibited not just because of the CRA, but because of the mentality of all
And that's
Americans.
What we're going to talk about, that mentality, folks. But that problem between our ears, that real estate between our ears is what the big problem has been. And we'll talk about that with Nicole Galinas on the other side of these messages, 20 after. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. B-I-Z. I hope you'll check that out. And all both of those websites, use them to your advantage. No barriers to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you hang out with us, use our stuff. Nicole Galinas is our guest. She's with the Manhattan Institute, senior fellow there, as well as a contributing editor to City Journal. And that's cityjournal.com, right, Nicole?
.org.
cityjournal.org, ladies and gentlemen, and then manhattan-institute.org.
Right, yes.
Okay, manhattan-institute. They can find your article that we're talking about now, Sheltering Speculation. They can find that at City Journal, can't they?
Right, exactly. And there's a hyphen there to city-journal.org.
City-journal.
Yes.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, Nicole, we were talking about some of the mechanics, some of the mechanical elements of the physical elements, so to speak, of why we got ourselves into this real estate situation we've got here. But then where we are now is to a large degree, it's a problem of trust. It's a problem of transparency. It's a problem of not knowing where the other shoe's going to drop, because the securities that these mortgages turned into became worth virtually nothing because nobody wanted to buy them. They couldn't be traded, right?
Right. Well, that's not totally true. They can be traded, but not for the prices the banks.
No, I shouldn't have said that. My point is they weren't being traded, and because of another regulation called the Fair Accounting Act, I think it is, they were required, the security companies, the investment banks were required to mark those securities that the mortgages were based on, or were involved in the mortgage in the securities. They required to mark them to market, which was virtually nothing, and that's what caused all this mayhem, isn't it?
Well, the securities were not trading at nothing. For example, I guess going back 2 months ago, a little bit more maybe, Merrill Lynch sold some of these mortgage-backed securities for 22 cents on the dollar to one of these distressed debt funds. So there's a price for these securities. It's just not the price that the banks want to sell them at.
And they got upside down on their capital requirements, though, because of that. Because they had to mark them to market, right?
Under any accounting system in the world, you've got to mark down the value of permanently impaired assets. So in some ways, the conservatives in particular have sort of plucked this mark-to-market accounting rule out of thin air as a red herring here. But we've had mark-to-market accounting for three decades, and we have it largely because the financial institutions asked for it. When you're not in the business of keeping a mortgage for 30 years anymore, but when you're in the business of trading that mortgage thousands of times and making huge profits based on massive amounts of debt off of that mortgage, you need a way to report those profits every quarter, and the way you do that is for mark-to-market accounting. Now, the banks loved marking these mortgages to market on the way up, not so much on the way down.
But if we could have suspended mark-to-market for a while, I think we could have let things. I think we could have let some of the hysteria subside. And
no,
we wouldn't
I
have had.
Disagree with you there, unfortunately, because these are permanently impaired assets. And when you look at Lehman Brothers,
But if the real estate, if the real estate is performing in the underlying, most of the mortgages in these securities, Nicole, are performing. The people are living in the houses, making their payments.
Lehman Brothers did not go bankrupt because it had marked its assets too low. It went bankrupt partly because it had kept its assets marked too high.
That's a fair point. Nicole, we only got a couple of minutes left. How can we prevent this from happening again? That's the big story to me. What has happened has happened. How do we prevent this from happening again?
Well, one thing you've got to do is treat housing like any other investment class, including houses that people live in. There's this false distinction between speculators and homeowners. You can speculate on the house that you live in, and you've got to have reasonable investment protections for people buying houses, which is something that is very politically difficult because people think it's an entitlement to buy a very expensive house, even if you've got people buying million-dollar houses who are only making $100,000 and so on down the line. I don't think we'll see another housing bubble anytime soon, but we've got to recognize all investments as investments and regulate them as such.
But Nicole, if you read the book Charles McKay wrote in 1848, Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds, that was 160 years ago, and he was reporting on three bubbles like this that the humans got themselves into. We've had a number of them since then. It almost makes me cynical about the ability of humans to regulate themselves.
Oh, sure, we'll always have bubbles, but we can keep them from becoming so big and so damaging. I mean, we know how to do this. We just have to sort of have the political will to do it.
The trick, Nicole, is to regulate ourselves from getting into trouble without overregulating so that we prevent innovation, we prevent investment, we prevent entrepreneurship. What do you think?
Right, absolutely, and that's easier said than done, of course.
It's not easy. It's not easy. And I fear, Nicole, that the pendulum is going to swing too far in the other direction over the next year or two or three.
Right, I do as well.
Yeah. Hey, Nicole, thanks for being here. I'm glad we ended on a note where we agreed on something. Nicole Galinas, ladies and gentlemen, she's the best. She's with City Journal and Manhattan Institute. Thanks, Nicole. See you next time.
Thank you.
That's Nicole Galinas, ladies and gentlemen. I always like having her on the show. Quick break. Right back with another good buddy of ours, Bert Folsom. He's got a brand new book. Stay with us. What's for the emotions on a
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.